What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Two Generation Podcast, a podcast where we share two different perspectives from two different generations.
And how to have those hard conversations with anybody about anything. I'm Wendy, I'm the mom.
And I'm Jack, I'm the son. Welcome to the show. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Two Generation Podcast. As always, the podcast that gives you two different perspectives from two different generations. Today, we're going to be talking about some pretty prevalent mental health issues like depression and anxiety and a few more things along the way. So stay tuned and let's get into it.
Hi, guys.
What's going on? All right. You want to kick it off?
Okay. Yeah. Jack. Tell me about some types of anxiety that you personally experienced in your wise old years of 22.
I've a few. I'll start with social anxiety because I feel like I usually experience that one the most. With social anxiety, it sort of got brought on, I think, with the whole pandemic and not seeing people, because I would just be a recluse and kind of stop hanging out with different people, and that because of the pandemic and everybody was just sort of obviously alone, I never kept up with those relationships. And when I tried, because I hadn't been with people for so long, that it would sort of put a damper on my social skills, the pre-existing social skills. And so now when I find myself in a social setting, I'm a little bit more uncomfortable than I normally would be because I haven't kept up with it, which I think would be the first thing I want to talk about is constantly keeping yourself involved with people, because the more time that you take away, at least this is just me personally, that it becomes harder to try to get back into the swing of things when it comes to socializing and making friends, because you feel like everything you say is embarrassing or you're not funny, or you just really question who you are and your personality and how these people view you,
right?
And which in turn makes you not want to hang out with people because you're constantly thinking like that. So I'd say that's a big one. I'd say just anxiety when it comes to not new experiences, which is more of a happy anxiety. Going new places, going places where I'm going to be speaking with loads of different people, loads of new experiences, which is very exciting, but I still have that sort of same anxious feeling where I'm kind of going round and round in my head of like, oh, you know, I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know what I'm going to experience. And I just kind of create these false realities.
But that anxiety doesn't stop you from doing it.
No, it doesn't at all. And I think it's something I've really tried to limit with myself, and something I've worked on is not letting my brain spin and thinking about the 99 different realities I think I'm going to experience when I do whatever I'm talking about. And just kind of seeing how it goes. Because, I mean, I want to say like 100% of the time that whatever you're thinking in your head is not going to happen when you go to that place. But you make it worse for yourself if you're constantly spinning and constantly in your head when you are actually, you know, when the time has come to do whatever you're doing. So I'd say, yeah, definitely social anxiety. I don't really experience anxiety in other places in my life. And I always look at you because you seem like when it comes to, you know, socializing with people, I kind of steer away from it. But you seem to have no concept of that at all.
I don't know if it's because I was raised when I was raised without the social media piece. And you, the only way that you could interact with people was to interact in person. Through the pandemic, I actually worked through the whole pandemic, so I still was with people.
That's true.
I could definitely see how it has affected so many people to this day. And I watched you and your sister go through it, which was very challenging, you know, to be so isolated away from all your friends during that pivotal time in your life when you're supposed to be with peers and you're supposed to grow and have these experiences, these interpersonal experiences live and in person. And that was taken away from you. And I see the effects, especially with your generation, and most closely to me, you and your sister, when it comes to different scenarios that come up now in your lives.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, it's weird because I can completely change it around and be a super social person and have a good time. And you've seen it. It's not like I'm this like kept to myself person and, you know, I'm afraid of talking with people and doing this and that. It's like, I'm not at all. But I think when I start to think about it too much, just like anything,
yeah,
it just prohibits me from actually taking the leap and just getting back into like the flow of conversation and the flow of hanging out with people that actually enjoy being around me instead of just, you know, yeah, sitting there and thinking, oh my God, I'm a goof.
You know, you are a goof.
I am a goof, but
in a good way.
Yeah. But I want to think, you know,
it's enjoyable to be with you and you do have those great social skills and you can present yourself and hang out with any group of people.
Yeah.
So that you do have. Even though sometimes you may doubt it.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, getting real here, which we're going to talk about when we talk about like substance abuse and how that contributes to mental health. I think, you know, I used to smoke weed for a while. And I think that that has entered my brain in a way where when I was smoking and I had bad conversational experiences with people and I'd be hanging out with friends. That's why I would never go and smoke with people. In the beginning I would, and I'd be having a blast. And then you have one mess up where you just start to question like, oh, that wasn't funny. That's embarrassing. What are you doing? These people don't even like you. And you're just like, that's not true. It's not. But that would stay in your head even when you're sober and you just continue to hold that anxiety just kind of going through life. But when it comes to my list of anxieties, I don't have like a list of anxieties. I do a lot of things that I feel like I probably should have anxiety for, but I really don't.
That's good.
And I think it's just sort of like the social thing. But like I said, once I get going, what it is exposure therapy. And that's what I feel like works best for me and something that helps me sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just put myself out there and not be able to like harness how much anxiety I really put into different situations. Like just going and doing something, even if you are super crazy anxious, and then afterwards thinking to yourself, oh, well,
I already
did it once. Mm-hmm. So I think just doing the things that you really are anxious about and then realizing afterwards, oh, I've already done it once, you know, I'll do it again and again. And you sort of just sort of numb yourself. And if you have the goal to put yourself in those sort of circumstances.
Or if you have to, say you are, you know, for your job, you have to meet with clients or put on courses or public speaking in any way. And I mean, that's a huge piece of anxiety for a lot of people.
No, I'm a nightmare when I get in front of people and I have to speak.
You know what?
But it comes out good.
Exactly. You get so anxious prior to, and then once it's actually over, it's good.
Yeah. Did you, when you were growing up, what did you have a bunch of anxiety as a teen, preteen, and then sort of just goes away? You start to become desensitized to it, but
used to it, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I think all teenagers have, preteens and teenagers have a certain amount of anxiety. I think when you're little, there isn't a label yet. You just, you feel, I think once puberty hits, then, you know, that anxiety piece pops in and you start thinking that everybody's looking at you, everybody's listening to you, the whole world revolves around you when everyone's really looking at themselves and thinking the same thing. But when it came to mental health, when I was growing up, it wasn't prevalent. I don't even think people used the word mental health. And if there were issues within the family, they stayed in the family. You didn't talk to people about them. You didn't, you know, air your laundry to anybody else. And the neighbors didn't know, even extended family. That's just something that you didn't share.
Right.
Because what will people think? So there were not even close to the resources that there are now. And, you know, you can talk about it. You can say anything to anybody about any aspect of mental health now. And someone will reach out and say, great, I can help you. Or I know where you can get some help. I know there was therapy. I went to therapy when I was younger for various reasons, but it wasn't talked about.
Yeah. And everybody suggests therapy. Mostly everybody you talk to.
Everybody should go to therapy. Yeah. Therapy is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just trying to share that, you know.
I'm used to it.
I know. It's going to be the common theme. At the beginning, I was like, I'm going to let you do the talking on this one. She's like, yeah, right. Yeah. So
I just, it's amazing and wonderful. And, amazed that the taboo is gone and people can actually get the help they need.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Yeah, it's wild. Even because we were saying before we started the cast, that even some employers offer mental health days.
Yeah.
Like people want you to take care of it. People see now that it's an issue that affects people in all different ways. Which I think is a really cool thing. I mean, there's no reason why you need to keep it bottled up. And I think we mentioned this on the last podcast where you just kind of keep stirring around and around in your head and it just develops into this nightmare ball. And you working in mental health for a long time would always tell me stories where, you know, people suppressed it and push it down. And then all of a sudden, you know, your brain cracks and you just are left with dealing with all these feelings and trauma that you've just suppressed for so many years and don't know how to, take care of it.
And I mean, work anxiety and career anxiety is very prevalent, and it is so important that companies now allow for mental health days, because oftentimes in your career, depending on your job situation, you don't get to speak up. You just have to do the job. And so you're forced to suppress it in certain ways, and you can't sometimes go to the boss or your supervisor or what have you and discuss what's going on, because that's just not the way that company works.
Yeah.
So I think that career anxiety is a bigger issue than we think. And it's great that companies allow you to, you know, take a mental health day and you know, take care of yourself. And self-care is also so important.
Yeah. I was going to ask actually before we jump onto this next thing. Did you see like the rise of therapy through the ages? Like where it was like, oh, they're in therapy. Watch out. Like, I don't know what they were labeled if you're going to therapy, if you were necessarily labeled crazy or you need to be like in an asylum or something, like how like crazy people took it. But did you see it become more shared and talked about?
Well, I definitely think it was labeled crazy rather than mental health. You know, you're crazy, or is there something wrong with you? You must be crazy. You must be sick.
Yeah.
And
sick. That's what it
those
was.
Labels are just old and not relevant, and they're actually terrible. They're terrible labels because they make people feel that they should be embarrassed, that they shouldn't talk about it, that they should hide away, that they should isolate. And that's the exact opposite of everything spoken about today. So I'm glad that it's out in the open and people don't have to feel embarrassed. I know some people do. I know, you know, some families will still have issues within those families, and it's only spoken about in that family,
totally.
In that family dynamic, which is really rough for, you know, people, especially when they get older. And that's what I, you know, unfortunately saw very often in my career, is people who suppressed, like you were saying, there's so many issues in their family dynamic. And then when they got out in the real world, they had very little coping skills, and things ended up exploding.
Yeah, and then it gets transferred on to their kids.
So it's, you know, it can be stopped. I mean, everybody has a chance to change it and get the help they need if they want it. There's so much help out there.
Yeah.
So many different ways to get help.
Yeah, and now is the best time, because there's absolutely no shame in doing so.
No shame.
Can't imagine any sort of conversation I've had in the past decade that, you know, you share that you're going through something and someone is like, you're sick, you need help. It's like, hey, go to therapy. Have you tried therapy? Like, that's usually the first phrase out of somebody's mouth nowadays, is like, hey, do you go to therapy?
Or
you
know, they'll say, really? Me too. I feel that same way, and I don't really know what to do about it. And that's pretty remarkable.
It is cool. I've always enjoyed that, where you just don't feel alone.
Yeah. I think that I started feeling more anxiety when I was in my, I don't know, my late 20s, early 30s, I think. And I'm not exactly sure why. I think it was adult pressure.
Sure.
And I think it was making the right decisions about your life. And am I going down the right path? Am I going to, you know, am I going to make money? Am I going to get married? Am I going to have kids? And then, you know, once you get, you know, fully into adulthood, sometimes you think you know, you're an imposter because you are not fully equipped to be an adult when you're thrown in anyway.
Yeah, that's
– That breeds anxiety.
That's,
you know?
Such a – honestly, I don't know why it skipped my mind, but that anxiety is wild. So I'm 22 now, and I guess since I was, I don't know, 18 was kind of iffy. Once you just, you hit a point in time where you just are independent. And yeah, you have loved ones in your life and your family, you know, will hopefully care about you and want to support you and this and that. But you're like, oh, wow, I'm on my own. I make the decisions now. It's not like, oh, I'll hold your hand, I'll do this. And depending on what kind of background you come from, like, I'm very grateful I get to come from a very loving background where my mom, you know, will help and support me and, you know, whatever's going on. But then when you're like, no, dude, you're 22. You got this. You know, you're – not that I come crying to her about, you know, everything. I'm making myself sound like that. But I just mean in general that, like, feeling of
– having that sounding board.
Yeah.
You know, because adulthood, you know, that transition is not easy and it does breed a lot of anxiety.
You're like, what am I going to do? What am I going to – you know.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So when something looks so enormous and you just feel like there's no way out, and you have no idea how to handle it, you, what I call chunking it down. I always use the analogy as well with my daughter is how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Yeah, that's great.
You, instead of looking at the entire elephant or the entire mountain, you look at the first step or the first issue, and then you take the next one, and that's chunking each individual issue down to break down the anxiety to where it's not such, you know, an enormous challenge to conquer.
How do you break that down? Because sometimes I feel like I have to eat the whole elephant. There's no way out. How do you sort of break it down if you can and sort of just kind of, I guess, prioritize your anxiety so that you're not dealing with it all at once?
Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to get overwhelmed with bills and school and work and kids and relationships and your job. I mean, just that, you know, everyday life.
Yeah.
And that just can feel overwhelming at different times or sometimes all the time. So it's literally, instead of looking at the whole, your whole life all at once, you take one thing and you say, okay, so for me, kids, for example, and I try to look at why I'm feeling anxious about the kids and why am I, what can I do that is going to, in that immediate moment, calm me down. And I lay out a plan. Okay, so I'm concerned that I won't be able to buy groceries and they're going to starve to death and then we're going to be homeless and then they're going to grow up and they're going to hate me. I mean, you know,
yeah,
those scenarios just pop into your head and grow and they get out of control where it's like, okay, so I'm going to budget so that I can buy the groceries so that they can eat and we won't become homeless and they'll still love me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just, it's taking one issue at a time and breaking that down to see how you can conquer that goal. And then once that's done, going to the next one. And then going to the next one.
It's like putting these little fires out one at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and there are situations and people who have extreme anxiety and anxiety attacks that feel like heart attacks and they just can't get a grasp. And there's so much help out there. I mean, there's therapy, there's medication, there's residential. There are so many different avenues now where you don't have to live like that. People in the past, especially, you know, my generation, didn't know all of those resources and lived with extreme anxiety. And now you don't have to. You can reach out if you don't have the means for therapy. I mean, there's so many different programs and options. And reach out to your friends.
Yeah,
reach out to your family, your loved ones. You know, even just starting to talk about it and getting it out of your head will hopefully help to release some of that pressure.
Yeah, I feel like that's one thing that I wish I would have learned sooner when I am super anxious or I am really dealing with something. Just talking about it can help exponentially and just sort of take that weight off. Because I used to be against going to therapy for a while.
Yes, you were.
And my reason was I had been through something that I feel like nobody else could understand. And I didn't feel like waste. It felt like a waste of time talking with someone who hasn't had that experience. And I always thought, well, what sort of advice could they possibly give me? And I was looking at it completely wrong. It's not necessarily advice, but it's tools to help you build a solid toolbox for when these issues do arise, that you can put out those little fires on your own.
Exactly. And it's through the talking that they help you help yourself to realize what's going on. I mean, a therapist is not there to tell you what to do and how to change your life. They're there to talk to you so that when you're talking, you can discover these things on your own as well.
Yeah.
So it's I'm grateful for therapists.
That's great. Yeah.
Another thing that is helpful when you're in a sort of a, you know, semi-extreme anxiety situation is the rule of three. And that is it's a grounding technique. And it brings you back to your body. Sometimes when you're so anxious, you feel out of your body and out of control. So the rule of three, it's three things you can see, three things you can hear, and then three things you can feel on your body, three parts of your body. And you can say them out loud. You can do it with somebody. You can do it repeatedly. But this gets you back in touch with you and your body, and it grounds you to help you to gain control again. Another tool.
Yeah,
works for some people, doesn't work for some people.
I was gonna say I've never tried that, but I feel like that could, you know, because I have experienced anxiety where you genuinely feel like I'm living in a dream right now. Like I'm not even, I feel like you're not even like making the right decisions all the time, and you're just that level of anxiety. Yeah, it just it pulls you out into a different place.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
So, and then there's, you know, the good anxiety, if that is such a thing. I mean, like you were saying before, the excitement anxiety. It's like you're going on a trip, and let's say you're going across the world, and you're anxious about it because you're going to a foreign country somewhere you've never been, but you're so excited because you're going on this amazing trip.
Right.
It's going to bring some anxiety, but that's like a positive anxiety or an exciting anxiety. And then, you know, there's also that anxiety that pushes you into making change. You know, it's doing something new, something that you have been scared of, or you need a change. And yeah, that's going to breed anxiety, but what does it look like on the other end?
Yeah, that's honestly one of the, I think the most exciting part about it is that you get pushed into the situation, you're frantic or whatever you've been thinking about. And then once it's over, you're basically just ripping off a different piece of you, putting a new one on that's even better. And just changing as a person in a whole. So to go about life and just thinking that anxiety is just this dreadful feeling that you should experience all the time, it's not. It can actually be really positive in a lot of different ways and help shape you into a person that one day walks around and has little to no anxiety when it comes to doing certain things. So I think that is a way that, you know, I try to look at it at least.
Yeah, it's a good positive spin. Which
I think is a better way, instead of just being like, oh, because every time I hear the word anxiety, I just think of like, oh my God, I can't
watch
that day is coming. It's, I don't know what I'm going to do. So trying to think about it like, okay, well, it's actually going to make me stronger.
There you go.
Instead of thinking that I'm so weak when it comes to dealing with it. And
yeah.
You know.
And again, we're not trying to discount people who have real anxiety and this sounds so light and easy and, oh, you can just make the change like that. It's not easy. Nothing about anxiety is easy. So if it is that extreme, there are, you know, ways of getting help and medications, et cetera. And if it's manageable anxiety, then, you know, you have the option and a way to really ground yourself and work on it. It's not an easy fix and nothing ever is, but it's doable and you're in control.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason why, I totally agree, not trying to discount, people's feelings at all, but I think part of the reason why listening to this podcast is so good and what you can take away from having it sound light and easy is because we have experienced our own anxiety in different ways and have been able to work on it and bring it to a point where we can actually talk about it and utilize these different skills and tools to not have it weigh us down every single day.
Exactly. Yeah, which leads us into depression.
Let's go.
And
even lighter subject.
Yeah. That word is used all the time now. Yeah. And it's, there's a lot of levels of depression. And there's the level where you
hang out
with your buddy. Yeah. Yeah, and they're like, oh, I'm just so depressed.
Yeah.
I'm so depressed about work. I'm so depressed about my girlfriend. And that's the type of depression where they're sad and they're using depression to substitute sad. And then the next day they're fine or they tend to work it out. And then there's that depression, that debilitating depression.
Yeah.
The type of depression that comes with loss.
Yeah.
And that depression is like no other. And you really feel that there is no end in sight. And how are you ever going to get through this? And how are you going to make it to tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it's weird. Before we get into that, I think it's weird. It's just weird to walk around and constantly say, I'm depressed. You know, everybody's just, it's almost like a buzzword.
Right.
When you are just feeling sad. And I've been like, yeah, you know, I'm feeling depressed. Everyone just is like, yeah, I'm depressed. And it's like,
You see it all the time on social media.
All the time. I think people just like to throw it around because it's relatable and it seems like everybody's sort of like depressed. And I'm not taking away from people that have like a debilitating depression. That's definitely a whole different story. But to say you're depressed when you're really sad sort of blurs the lines when someone actually does say that they're depressed and it is the debilitating kind.
Right,
because then you don't take them seriously at all. It's like the boy who cried wolf. Everybody's saying they're depressed, and then someone's like, "No, I'm depressed," and they're like, "Okay." Everybody says that, and they're like, "No, I'm really going through something right now."
Yeah,
and then it's just sort of not taken as seriously. That's where I'm saying when I feel like everybody says it, that it takes away from people who are really struggling, especially with loss. Is a for me personally, experiencing that sort of depression is unlike anything else.
Right.
Because you genuinely think at that point in time that it's something that you're never going to be able to get past. And you're going to wake up every day feeling these feelings. And every good experience you have, you feel guilty. And you feel robbed of feeling happy and laughing. Or you begin to forget, because you're having such a good time, that you sort of fall into, oh, you know, I can actually be happy. And then it comes flooding back in, and you're like, your brain's, no, you're not going to be happy right now. Remember, no. You have this to think about. And you're like, oh, yeah.
Well, you know, when we experienced the loss of your dad through suicide, that was the most debilitating feelings of depression I think all three of us felt.
Yeah.
And especially with you guys at a young age, like you just said, you felt guilty about having fun and playing with your friends and doing normal kid stuff.
Yeah.
Which, you know,
it feels like you shouldn't be.
Right.
Yeah.
And you feel like nobody understands.
Yeah.
Nobody could ever understand. Nobody's been through loss, you know, or loss like that. And yeah, I know you and your sister experienced a lot of even shame around it, because you didn't want to talk about it. You didn't want your friends to know, because you didn't want to have them pity you, you were saying, and that they would never understand, especially the friends with two parents.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it feels embarrassing. And you definitely don't want people to find out, because it looks weird when you're – because it happened when I was – I'm not – you know, now it's completely different. It's happened when I was going into middle school. So you're already self-conscious about yourself and your own things. And then a parent dies and you are developing friendships and relationships and everyone's coming over to your house. And at that age, you know, I was used to just lie, because that's their question. They're like, oh, you know, where's your dad at? Are your parents divorced? And I used to have so many – he's in the military. He works for Google, and everyone just bought it.
Not a business.
You know, yeah, I just do, you know, a bunch of different things because I didn't want people to find out. And then you come to terms with it, and you do let people know, or people end up finding out on their own, which I used to hate that. Especially if you're listening to this and you live in a small town where everybody knows everything about everybody, and stuff that you're trying to keep away from people, or you told one person is now everybody's new or news. That when people actually come around and they do try to support you and show that they care, you almost think of it as pity. And that's a weird.
I think maybe at the ages you guys were, that's how it was perceived. But yeah, for me, you know,
growing up now, it's
welcome to help, and people were genuinely, you know, concerned and cared about us and loved us and wanted to help and surround our, you know, us with, you know, community. But it's, I mean, you see it from different perspectives when it happens to you at different ages.
Yeah. And it also, what was I going to say? Lost my train of thought. I'll come back to it. Okay.
So for us, I mean, the first thing that I did, because I didn't know anywhere else to turn, was go to therapy, like literally the next day. And because I, again, talk about not being in touch with your body and not feel like you're floating. I mean, it was so surreal. Any loss is very challenging. So we went right into therapy, and we stayed in therapy for as long as we needed. And one day the kids said, we don't want to talk about dad anymore. And the therapist said, okay. And we've all been in and out of therapy since. But the thing with a loss of a parent is the things come up, like when milestones hit, like when you and your sister got your driver's licenses, or when you graduate, you know, it's something that you always carry with you, and it never goes away. But that extreme, intense depression and pain does, thank God,
it start subsides.
To subside.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people could never move on.
I think that's one of the things that I like that that pain coming back when you do hit the milestones is sort of broken up. Like what I was saying about, like, you feel guilty about having a good time, or you're having a good time, and you kind of just like forget about it. Like, I was young, so it's not like the first thing I'm thinking about all the time. Definitely sad, but it wasn't like, you know, when you're, you know, having a birthday, you're, you know, actually laughing with your friends. That's not like, oh, you know, how is tomorrow going to go? You know? So you're not really thinking about it. Now being older and going through graduating and getting your driver's license and getting your own place and just having these things that you wish they were there to see is when I now feel that those feelings come back. Yeah. Because now when I'm having fun and laughing, those feelings don't trickle back. It's like it subsides. You're a little bit more numb to that feeling. The pain is still very, very much there when you truly think about it. But I'm thinking about, like, when you do go through the milestones, that's when I realized that pain has sort of came back and made me feel those feelings again, where you feel guilty, you feel sad, you feel like someone's missing out on something that's really special.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Except continue to carry on.
Right.
And I think a big part of loss and how you deal with it and getting back up on your feet is resiliency. And one thing that I want to mention is that when that did happen, which has really helped me and maybe can just give some other people a really cool perspective on loss, or, you know, really anything in general that creates that sort of debilitating depression, is life still continues to move on. And when it first happened, I was like, well, why are we the only ones that are sad and everyone else is just kind of going about their life? I'm like, don't they care too? And I remember you being like, they have their own lives to live. Life continues to move on. You know, you can continue to sit here and feel this way and let it just take you on its wild ride, or you can pick yourself up and continue to be the person that you once were and have things, for better or for worse, get easier and a lot more manageable. And over time, being that resilient and constantly picking yourself back up makes it an easier task to deal with than not doing anything about it at all and constantly feeling it's your fault.
Right.
If you sort of put yourself back in the scheme of things and not constantly think that this is how it's going to be for the rest of your life, and what's really honestly really helped me.
Yeah, and I mean the our circumstances, you know, there's always the people left behind are always left with the why. And with kids, like you said, you know, it wasn't my fault. And no, it wasn't your fault. And it, and we'll never know, truly know all the whys. And that's, you know, makes the grieving part sometimes harder and longer.
Yeah.
But we, through a lot of communication and sticking together and picking each other up when we're down, you guys including picked me up plenty of times, and with each year passing and actually looking back at the fond memories and being able to laugh again and being able to look at pictures and when the holidays come, you know, talk about the memories.
Yeah.
It actually, it's doable. And at the time you don't think it is. And sitting here today, I actually feel it brings me peace and it brings me happiness and joy that the three of us can look, you know, back on the memories now fondly and laugh, and doesn't take away from what happened, and it doesn't take away from how much you miss that person. Yeah. And how much you wish they were here, but that you get the opportunity to, instead of saying, they're missing out and I wish they were here and this sucks, is like, okay, I'm carrying on for them and I'm going to enjoy my life just like they would want to see me do.
Yeah. I think letting that, it's kind of where I was getting at, where you let that sort of stop you and it just knocks you down. And it, at a certain point, it becomes almost impossible to get back up because you've been thinking like that for such a long time. But I think the big thing why it's also really been easier, and this kind of goes back to, you know, reaching out to the people that love you and support you, is that we all supported each other and we all, you know, at different points in time were able to talk about it and get it off our chest. And even when it wasn't talking about the loss directly, but how it impacted different areas of our lives and sort of tracking that back to, oh, it's maybe because of the loss or it's because of this or that. And constantly having that form of communication helps break down those barriers and helps get it out of your head, honestly, as quickly as possible. Instead of, you know, like, just don't be alone. Try not to be alone as much as possible, especially, you know, in a time like that.
Yeah.
Because that's when the demons really come creeping in, and it can become a very difficult challenge. The
depression can obviously spiral out of control to where you just feel that hopeless feeling. So, I mean, to this day, I even, you know, I'll hear a song, one of our songs, you know, and I cry. But I cry not these really sad, depressed, oh, I wish feelings. It's, it hits me. But then right after that, because of how much work we've done and how close we are and how we've dealt with everything, then I think of a happy memory. Like, I mean, those songs, especially music, is wrapped around everything. So it's remembering, you know, our loved ones in as positive as possible, especially in those particular ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else.
Yeah.
I can add on to that. I want to say just, because I don't know if you wanted to say some more on this, but as an overall, from what I realized, it does get easier and you're never trapped. And in this day and age, there are unlimited resources to get help and find people who are willing to be a listening ear and not judge you or call you crazy. And who genuinely want to help. But that also comes down to you and you wanting the help. And as a person who never wanted the help and always wanted to try to take it on by themselves and was always an, oh, I can do it, I got it type of guy.
I don't need any help.
Giving into that has helped immensely. And I at some points in time wish I had taken advantage of it sooner, because it definitely had a negative impact on different areas of my life and relationships with friends and family, and sort of outcasting myself in ways that I really didn't need to, because I was dealing with my own inner stuff that I felt like nobody would understand. But people don't even necessarily want to just be there to understand. They just want to listen.
Right, or help.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't have done it initially without the amazing outpour of love from my friends and family. And then as things, when time starts to pass and you have to get back on your feet and you have to, you know, be a single mom and take care of the kids and pay the bills and all that, I found that I was very much saying, I got it, I can do it, I don't need your help, because I didn't want to, I guess, burden anybody. And that was just sort of my internal pattern. And it took me a long time to open up and get rid of that. And that's a long time pattern for me as a person. And once I realized that I did need help and that I wasn't being a burden on people and people were, they wanted to genuinely help. And finally, when I let them in, it changed so many things for me, and it helped release a lot of my own guilt and my own feelings of blame and my own sadness. And allowing yourself to be surrounded by love is such an empowering feeling. And that's why I wanted to talk about this. We wanted to talk about this because you can feel empowered after a loss like this. Mm-hmm. You can get through your depression and anxiety and feel empowered. And along the way, empowering others, which I hope that we're able to do.
Yeah. That was beautifully said.
Thank you.
I'm trying to think where I want to go from here.
And allow yourself to laugh. You know, I mean... Yeah. We laugh a lot, and that's, you know, one of our, it's been always been a saving grace, and it's just genuine laughter, just brings joy and surrounds, you know, yourself with joy, and you laughing is contagious and other people laugh, and, you know, we always want to continue to laugh, and it doesn't take away from the person that you lost, especially if they love to laugh. So we are big advocates of laughter.
Totally. That's, I mean... We're like a bunch of hyenas running around here. Yeah. It, I don't know. That's why I was saying this podcast is hard to do, because,
yeah,
just gets my brain spinning. Yeah, we have like 2 more minutes if you want to add anything else.
We just want to make sure that, like Jack said before, if you're feeling any of these feelings, or if you know anybody that's feeling any of these feelings, you know, reach out to them. Have them get the help. You get the help. You know, it could start with a conversation with a family member or a friend. But like we were saying earlier several times throughout the podcast, there's so many resources. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to go through it alone. You really don't. There, people love you, and you can get the help you need and get through it and see yourself on the other side. And go back to enjoying life and laughing and singing and dancing and listening to music.
And then being there as that person that actually now can say they've gone through those struggles and then turn around and support somebody who is starting at square one, just like you and I did, or you did.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So that's our hope is with this podcast in particular, is to share our experiences with mental health, and that it is doable. And it's always a work in progress. I certainly am always continuing to work on myself every single day, because life comes up, things come up, life's life, and it, you know, will throw you a curveball when you least expect it. So if you can, you know, maneuver those curveballs, and, you know, you really are in control of your brain, you can get through anything.
Yeah. It does get easier, folks. Yeah. Gets a whole lot easier. And that was episode 3 of the 2Gen podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening. We're going to be releasing a new episode every Monday, so be sure to stay tuned in to YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcast fix. Also, feel free to email us at the2genpodcast@gmail.com with any topics, questions, or anything you'd like to have answered or discussed. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Legal disclaimer. The 2Gen podcast and content posted is presented solely for general, informational, and entertainment purposes. This is not intended as a substitute for the advice of a physician, professional coach, psychotherapist, or other qualified professionals. Listeners should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical or mental health condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions.